This is consolidation of two cases, 19-12-33 and 19-13-10, Auto Owners Insurance Company versus Bolt Factory Loss Owners. You may proceed, Mr. Cantrell.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, this is Connor Cantrell on behalf of Auto Owners Insurance Company, which was the plaintiff in the case below and is the appellant in these cases. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes in rebuttal, if time permits, please. Auto Owners is asking this court to reverse the trial court's sua sponte determination that the trial court lacked subject matter jurisdiction pursuant to the ripeness doctrine over Auto Owners' claims for declaratory relief against its insured class. Auto Owners believes that the trial court erred as a matter of law when it found that Auto Owners' claims were contingent on the entry of judgment in the underlying case against Sierra Glass. Auto Owners believes that's reversible error and further believes that the court abused its discretion when it denied Auto Owners' Rule 60 motion on these similar issues. Auto Owners requests that the court remand the case and allow the case to proceed because Auto Owners' claims are ripe and they became ripe the moment that Sierra Glass entered into this settlement agreement with the association in the case below. I know that there's a jurisdictional question that the appellees raised, and I'd like to address the jurisdictional questions at the end of my presentation and turn really to the heart of this matter, which is the Nunn agreement and the Nunn case. And it's important to remember what the Nunn case says, which is that when an insured being defended by an insurance company is exposed to a judgment in excess of policy limits, the insured can enter into an agreement with the plaintiff where the insured confesses judgment in favor of the plaintiff in exchange for the plaintiff's covenant not to execute and an assignment of the insured's rights against the insurance company, including any extra contractual claims. What the Nunn case doesn't say, and this is confirmed by subsequent Supreme Court precedent, which is the StressCon case, the Nunn case does not say that when an insured is exposed to a judgment that may not be covered, which is fundamentally different than a judgment in excess of policy limits, that the insured can still enter into the same or similar protective agreement. A potential lack of coverage, meaning there's enough money in limits, but some question about whether the claim falls within the grant of coverage or whether some exclusion applies, cannot, as a matter of law, form the basis of a Nunn agreement. And that's really the seminal issue that Auto Owners is seeking to have decided, or was seeking to have decided by the trial court, and what we're seeking to have remanded back to the trial court to have decided. The moment that Sierra Glass entered into that agreement, it constituted a breach of the policy and created the type of direct and immediate harm to Auto Owners that makes the claims ripe. And that's supported by the Bill Richardson v. Gonzalez case, which is really the seminal Tenth Circuit case on ripeness. And in that case, the Bill Richardson case was a case about whether a statute prohibiting the use of campaign contributions was constitutional. Bill Richardson says that it was unconstitutional. The state objected, and Bill Richardson filed a declaratory judgment action. Just like Sierra Glass in this case, the state there said, well, hey, that case isn't right until he decides whether he's going to run for office or whether he can explain the nature and extent of how he changes his fundraising activities. And the court rejected that. The court said,
the principal problem here is there's ongoing litigation in the state court at this time. And generally, if the same issue is being decided in a case proceeding through the state courts, we should not hear a declaratory judgment action on the same point. Now, is it not correct that in the Colorado Supreme Court case, the argument made by the insured is that we could enter into this agreement because we weren't being defended in good faith by the insurance company? And that's also, well, it seems to me that the same issues, the same essential issues, are being addressed in the state court. Where am I wrong about that?
Judge, I think you're wrong about that. If you look at the order granting the cert petition at the Supreme Court, it's limited. The cert petition only says that it's going to decide whether an insurance company who is defending under a reservation of rights can intervene to defend its insured on the merits. The Court of Appeals opinion even expressly says in footnote 3 of the Court of Appeals opinion, it says, we are not deciding the validity of the Nunn agreement. And so that question is not up on cert, and it's really not up at all at the trial court or anywhere in the state court action. The only place, Judge, where that issue is being raised is this one. And that's why it became ripe. The only place where Auto Owners is expressly, affirmatively saying, hey, this Nunn agreement is invalid as a matter of law and constitutes a breach of the policy is in the declaratory judgment action, which is this case.
I think that is not part of the response by the insured in the Colorado Supreme Court action. They're not responding that you don't have a right to intervene because you lost your right when you didn't represent us in good faith. That's not one of the issues before the Colorado Supreme Court?
I don't believe so, Judge. I think their response to, well, first of all, the opening brief at the Supreme Court has not been filed, and so I'm not sure what they're going to say specifically. I'm not sure what we're going to say. Because it hasn't been filed yet. But the issue of whether an insurance company can intervene under Rule 24 is not the same. I mean, there's elements to intervention questions, but they're not the same as whether the agreement itself is valid or not. They may be related, but they're not being decided, and that's really the question that you raised, Judge, is are they being decided in the state court action? And the answer to that is no. The state court action is not going to resolve whether the Nunn agreement is valid. Only this case.
Counsel, this is Judge Carson.
Judge Matheson, do you have any questions?
Well, let me be at the risk of maybe repeating the question, but to get more clarity, wouldn't the Colorado Supreme Court need to conclude that Sierra Glass breached the insurance contract in order to say that Auto Owners had a right to intervene?
No. What the Supreme Court needs to conclude to say that Auto Owners has a right to intervene are the elements under Rule 24, which basically are about whether Auto Owners' interest in that litigation are contingent. So there's a split, there's a national split of authority on the contingency issue. Some states say when an insurance company has issued a reservation of rights, its interest in the litigation is contingent because it's contingent on the coverage questions. Other states, and I think hopefully Colorado, says when an insurance company issues a reservation of rights, it still has a sufficient interest in the underlying litigation to permit it to intervene. So it's not about whether the settlement agreement itself is valid under Colorado law. The issue that the Supreme Court is deciding is resolving that nationwide split on the contingency question. And so I think hopefully that answers your question, Judge.
Judge Carson, do you have any questions at this time?
Yeah, it's sort of along the same lines. Let me see if I can say it any differently. If the Nunn agreement is valid, would that affect your ability to intervene in the underlying case?
No, because again, the question of whether auto owners is permitted to intervene is whether auto owners has a direct interest in the litigation. So the fact that Sierra Glass and the association decided to enter into a valid agreement, if that's what someone decides, auto owners would still argue that it would be permitted to intervene because one of the things that auto owners is trying to intervene to do is to get a fair judgment, a real judgment decided in a true adversarial proceeding, which did not happen and would never happen with even a valid non-agreement. And that's why in the Kuzava case, which we cited in the brief, the Colorado Court of Appeals permitted intervention to say, look, the insurance company has an interest in this litigation to go have a real trial and to go figure out whether there's liability, and if so, what are the real damages, not some made-up number that the insured and the plaintiff come to. And so even if the agreement is valid, you can still intervene, and that's what the Kuzava case decided.
So when you were trying to intervene, did you ever take the position that one basis for you intervening was the entry of the non-agreement by the insured and the plaintiff?
Well, sure. That was the entry of the agreement was the impetus for intervening. I mean, if they wouldn't have entered into the agreement, then there would have been no reason to intervene because we would have just went and had a jury trial. But they entered into the agreement, waiving the jury trial, agreeing not to present a defense, and then went and had a fake trial with no objections, no openings, no closings by the defendant. And so the entry of the agreement was why we intervened. I reserved 3 minutes, and my clock says I'm at 12, so I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time.
Okay. Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you.
May it please the court, this is Nelson Boyle. I represent both Sierra Glass and the Bolt Factory Auto Owners Association. I'd like to start by addressing a few of the questions that the panel asked auto owners. Judge Hartz, I believe, asked, now I'm paraphrasing, but is the insured not arguing that the insurer lost its rights by acting in bad faith, lost its rights to intervene in the action below by acting in bad faith? And we disagree with auto owners here that the agreement was to not have a jury trial, and that's in the agreement. And so to have the ability to intervene, the Supreme Court would have to overturn the non-agreement, or at least find that portion of the non-agreement not valid. And I think that addresses the questions of Judge Matheson and Judge Carson as well regarding whether it would have to conclude that Sierra Glass breached to allow auto owners to intervene. This case, the affirmative defenses that were asserted against auto owners' claims in this case, include that auto owners acted in bad faith or that waived or is stopped from raising its claims. And its claims center around, as Mr. Cantrell said, they say whether Sierra Glass breached, but it's really, as we said in our brief, who breached first? And, auto owners pleaded, and I think it's on page 18 of the record, in paragraph 48, auto owners pleaded that, that they acted in good faith at all times. And Sierra Glass disagrees with that, that's why it brought its counterclaims that, with that, I welcome some questions from the panel.
Well, I'll begin. This is Judge Hartz. Did I hear you just say that to allow intervention by auto owners, the Colorado Supreme Court would have to find that the non agreement was invalid?
That's our position, Judge.
That's not the opposing position, and they... auto owner says that the Colorado Court of Appeals decision specifically says that they're not considering the validity of the non-agreement. Or maybe I misheard that. Is that correct?
They did say they were not considering the validity of the non-agreement, but they also didn't, auto owners didn't win there.
But the way auto owners has described the certification by the state Supreme Court, the grant of cert, it says it's to determine a more general issue of whether, when there has been a non-agreement, assuming its validity, the insurer has the right to intervene or not. And that depends on whether it's considered by the state court just a contingent interest, which would not allow intervention, or a more significant interest. And that's irrespective of whether the agreement itself is valid. So why do you think the validity of let me summarize. Why do you think the validity of the NUN agreement is before the Colorado Supreme Court?
Your Honor, the NUN agreement itself says that the parties waived the jury trial and would have a trial of the court. So to address whether they could intervene, because what they want to intervene, I guess, so just to intervene, no, but to intervene to do what they want to do, which is to have a jury trial on damages and on liability, I guess, and causation, would be, to undo at least part of the NUN agreement, which says that that's waived.
Well, the parties, the two parties in the lawsuit might agree to something, but then if another party is allowed to intervene, the judge is not bound by what the two parties say, the two original parties. If the intervening party says, we think there should be a jury trial, and the judge agrees, that doesn't violate the NUN agreement. It just means that the court is not bound by the NUN agreement.
I understand what you're saying. I just think that, if they get to that point, then they have to decide. I mean, under NUN, party that is insured can enter into an agreement that is a protective settlement agreement when the insurer acts in bad faith and jeopardizes them with a judgment that's not covered. Because that's what NUN says. I mean, they have to decide whether this could be a NUN agreement in that case. But I'd also like to turn to other reasons why, the crux of this case is about the bad faith case, which is auto owners' words in the hearing that we attached the transcript to our brief from the garnishment action. They say the crux of this case is about the bad faith case.
This is Judge Matheson. If I could just jump in I'm interested in focusing more on the basic concept of ripeness on which the district court relied. Why haven't the events already occurred that are needed to decide the declaratory judgment claim regarding Sierra Glass's alleged bad faith breach? In other words, there may be reasons for the district court to back off and, comity, abstention, exercise of discretion as to whether to go forward with a declaratory judgment action. But I'm interested in why the issue is not ripe as an Article III matter when everything has happened that would permit the court to decide the issue.
Well, Judge Matheson, thanks for your question. I think the case law says that the courts don't favor, and part of the prudential reason for ripeness is the courts don't favor piecemeal litigation or allowing a party to an advance ruling on one part of a case when the rest of the case isn't before the court. Or in Colombian Finance Corp, there's a discussion of the Calderon case, I think, and it talks about an advance ruling on an affirmative defense. Here, it wouldn't be an affirmative defense because it's they're the plaintiffs, but all of their claims would be affirmative defenses to bad faith claims if they were raised first. And the same idea holds. Here, there's no ripeness for the bad faith claims because there's no judgment yet, the whole thing would be mooted.
Counsel, what do you mean by no judgment? No judgment where? I mean, there was a judgment in the state trial court.
Yeah, I misspoke. There's a judgment. It's just been, it's up on appeal, so it's not a final judgment for ripeness purposes.
I don't want to belabor the point too much, but more typically, what happens in declaratory judgment actions is the plaintiff is anticipating something that is imminent to happen or will happen, and then the question is, well, is it close enough that the issue is right? But here, the non-agreement has already happened. And the plaintiff, Auto Owners, is saying, look, we think that breached the insurance contract. So I'm just not seeing where ripeness comes in. I can see other reasons, as I said, for the district court to back off, but I'm having a hard time understanding the reason that it used.
Your Honor, the defense to their argument that Sierra Glass breached is that Auto Owners breached first, and that's the bad faith claim.
And that happened back even before the non-agreement.
Yes.
So in terms of the relevant underlying events, they've all happened.
Yes.
If the district court reached the merits on the in the declaratory judgment action, why couldn't you litigate the who breached first question by arguing that Sierra Glass didn't breach because Auto Owners breached first? Why couldn't you just raise it there?
Well,
in fact, that is the affirmative defense,
yeah,
isn't it?
That would be our defense. We respectfully that's part and parcel with the bad faith claims that were dismissed. But on top of that, the Colorado Supreme Court is going to have to dig into this to decide whether or not the non-agreement was valid. And I think that's what Auto Owners is going to try to put before them in their opening brief, but they haven't filed that yet, so I can't. That's just a guess.
Thank you.
Judge Carson, do you have any questions?
I do. Am I right that one of the things asserted in the declaratory judgment action was that the state court judgment was not enforceable?
I'm sorry, you said that the state court action was not enforceable.
That was that was one of the items in the declaratory action.
Yeah.
Right. And I guess I'm just wondering, does that make a difference in this case? Since if Auto Owners received relief from the Colorado Supreme Court, presumably it would undo the judgment below and there'd be a new trial with Auto Owners being able to intervene.
That's correct, and potentially, I mean, if there was a new trial, if they were to win at the Supreme Court in Colorado and then have a new trial, I mean, potentially either Sierra Glass could win, or auto owners could win, or that the judgment could be, you know, different, you know, for less, or you know, or it could be the same. I guess it could be more, but you know, for them to argue that the judgment is invalid, which is part of what they're saying in the you know, in their declaratory judgment claims, is right on. I agree with Your Honor that's you know, what's at issue in the declaratory judgment action.
Counsel, isn't it typical, though, when there's a liability lawsuit and the insurer says it believes that it doesn't have a duty to defend or even to indemnify, that the insurer then will go to another court and seek a declaratory judgment, relieving it of any obligation under the insurance policy? So if this case is sent back down by the Colorado Supreme Court, wouldn't auto owners claim that it has no duty to defend or indemnify? Would that still be a totally appropriate declaratory judgment action to proceed with?
Your Honor, at least under Colorado law, that's true as long as it wouldn't jeopardize the insured's rights. You know, but that's only on, you know, typical policy defenses. Like, you know, the policy says this, and you know, and so therefore we don't have to indemnify, but we don't have to pay this portion of the damages.
Counsel, why does this not fit within that? It's saying that the insurer breached the contractual duty to act, you know, to cooperate in the defense. I'm not sure exactly what the policy language is. The insurer did not comply with that agreement, and that voids any obligation of the insurer to the insured. Why is that different from your typical declaratory judgment action?
Because, under Constitution Associates and HECLA, I think that you know, they wouldn't be able to bring that action because if they were wrong and they lost on that, they'd be jeopardizing their insured's rights potentially by the discovery and the things that come up in the claim, you know, in the declaratory judgment action while the liability case is ongoing.
How would that jeopardize? I don't understand any risk of jeopardizing the trial of the liability action.
Because the defense to that would go into how auto owners, you know, breached first, and that would potentially expose, you know, the things that were, you know, that the defense was doing in that case, in the liability case, and that would become public and you know, be part of the public record. And so then the plaintiff in the underlying case, you know, would be able to have access to that. And so that might reveal, you know, trial strategy or defense strategy, you know, that would you know, be opened up to the plaintiff in the liability case.
Okay, Counsel, your time has expired, I believe. Is that correct, Mr. Wyman?
Yes, it is, Your Honor.
But I'll see if anybody else has questions. Judge Matheson, do you have further questions?
No, I don't. Thanks.
Judge Carson?
No, I don't have any questions. Thanks.
Thank you. Okay. I think Mr. Cantrell still has a few minutes. Is that correct?
3 minutes and 14 seconds left for Mr. Cantrell, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Cantrell, you may proceed.
Thank you. Regarding
this assertion that there's going to be some prejudice to Sierra Glass by taking statements inconsistent with what they would take in the declaratory judgment. There's simply no record evidence of that. They've never asserted it. They've never stated how they could be prejudiced, but they've never stated how they would be prejudiced. And as Your Honors have mentioned, all the facts related to this issue surrounding the Nunn agreement are whether auto owners should have settled. And that has no substantive impact on how Sierra Glass would defend itself in the underlying case, which takes me to my next point, which is how the underlying case would proceed. And we have an example, and it's the Kuzava case. In that case, the Court of Appeals allowed United Fire to intervene. They went back to the trial court, and the only thing that happened in the trial court is the judgment got vacated. The agreement still exists in the trial court. So there's record evidence of that from the state court in the Kuzava case. So the notion that the Supreme Court is going to decide that this agreement is valid or not is simply wrong. The Supreme Court is not going to decide that issue. The Supreme Court, even if it gets remanded, and the trial court is going to presume that that agreement is valid. It's the underlying case has nothing to do with the validity of the Nunn agreement. The validity of the Nunn is only here. Yes.
Counsel, let me ask about the contention by Appley that you have been inconsistent with respect to your rightness arguments. They quote you as saying that the real essence of the declaratory judgment case and the essence of all this case really is Sierra's bad faith claim against auto owners, and yet you argued in district court that Sierra Glass's bad faith and breach of contract counterclaims were unripe. So
sure.
How can the bad faith issue be central to the declaratory judgment action?
Well,
not be unripe, but the counterclaim raising the same issues is unripe.
Sure. So first of all, statements made by counsel during scheduling conferences are not judicial admissions. That's a Teleglobe case, 493 F 3rd 345 at 377 3rd Circuit 2007. So something that was made during a scheduling conference that isn't positive
was that true? What the attorney said? I'm interested in the.
Sure. So what? Yeah, so the essence of auto owner's declaratory judgment action is the entry of the agreement. And what they're saying is the reason that they were entering into the agreement is that auto owners acted in bad faith. So that's the essence of the case. But Colorado law is clear that bad faith claims don't ripen in this context until there's a final judgment against the insured. So if I said, and I'm sure I did if they quoted me, that the essence is the bad faith claim, what I meant was the essence is the entry of the agreement. And as Your Honors have mentioned, all of those facts are in. And that is the point of this whole case, and that's why this case is so important, because if an insured is allowed to enter into this agreement, it necessarily subjects the insurance companies to become party defendants. And that's not the law. That's not the benefit of the bargain, especially when there's no excess. The benefit of the bargain when there's no excess.
Excuse me, counsel.
Yep.
In the declaratory judgment action you're raising, is it not correct that Sierra can defend against that on the ground that you acted in, or you know, auto owners acted in bad faith in not representing it properly in the state court proceedings? Will that not be an issue?
Sure, it will be an issue, but that's
why. Then if that's going to be an issue, why is the counterclaim of Sierra Glass for bad faith unripe? Why that would be a problem for you to argue a point that's inconsistent with and win, and then argue an inconsistent point later on.
Because they're different theories and they're different causes of action, right? The Colorado bad faith scheme in Colorado, where treble damages and awards of fees, is based on certain theories and principles and fiduciary obligations that insurance companies have to insureds. And so that's why, to be right, there has to be an entry of judgment in excess of limits for there to even give rise to a bad faith claim, because the bad faith claim is based on those principles of law. Conversely, the duty to cooperate is different. It's purely a contract claim. And so they're not inconsistent. It's a defense, and if they win, I'm sure it'll be law of the case or something that they'll be able to use. But it's not inconsistent to suggest that Auto Owners was relieved of its duty to defend by the entry of the agreement, just in the same manner as every other declaratory judgment case that gets filed in federal court, where an insurance company says there's no duty to defend because there's some policy defense. It's the same thing that we're doing here. It just happens to be a breach of the cooperation clause as opposed to some coverage defense. I didn't hear a beat, but I've got to believe my time is up.
Well, let me ask. We asked a few extra questions on the opposing counsel, so let me ask. Judge Matheson, do you have any further questions?
No, I don't. Thanks.
Judge Carson?
I do. My question is, assume that your DEC action is allowed to go forward in federal court and you win. What happens to your desire to intervene in the state court action?
It would be abrogated, presumably, if we win outright and Judge Jackson or whoever says that Auto Owners no longer has a duty to defend or indemnify, then the state court action would be mooted, and Auto Owners would withdraw its defense, and the association would have a judgment against Sierra Glass or to do whatever they want with. But that's the same as happens in any declaratory judgment case where the insurance company wins. You defend under a reservation of rights. You DJ it. If you win, then you withdraw the defense. And you could seek fees. You could seek reimbursement of fees and costs. But that's what would happen in the state court case.
Okay, if that's all the questions, then thank you, counsel. Case is submitted, and counsel excused.